All right. But at any rate, just one thing I want you to notice. There's heavenly rejoicing here in verse 17. There's heavenly rejoicing. And notice what goes on there. There's rejoicing, there's reverence, and there's worship and praise. I'll put them all up there, Matt. And look at this. It says, and the 24 elders who sat before God on their thrones fell upon their faces and worshiped God. And just one thing I want you to notice here that you need to pay close attention to. Here we are, I haven't been pointing this out too much, but every place we come in these chapters, when John gives some description, you got to remember, there he is. He is giving us the perspective from heaven. He's there. He's right there at the throne of God, seeing these things unfold, seeing the seals open, the trumpets sounding, the bowls, judgments are poured out. He's going to see all of that from heaven's perspective. And then, all of a sudden, he sees it initiated in heaven. Then he sees the effect of it taking place on earth, which I think gives us a clue of what it's going to be like for us during the tribulation period. After the rapture, we're going to be in heaven. I think we're going to be able to see this stuff just the way John is. It'll be exciting. Some of you will say, I don't want to see what happens there. That's terrible. Well, you know, be like I was. The first time I was, as a young child, I was watching Ten Commandments with, who's the guy that did that part there?
Charlton Heston.
And there came a point where he killed that Egyptian. And they show that murder. I don't even remember how they show it right now, but I was so scared as a 10-year-old boy that I kind of walked out of the room and snuck out of the room. And my older sister says, what's the matter? Are you scared? Yes, I was. I didn't want to see that murder going on. And if you're in heaven like that and you don't want to look, I'm sure you don't have to. But that'll be interesting to see that. From heaven's perspective, they're rejoicing and there's reverence and there's worship and praise. 17, saying, we give thee thanks, O Lord God Almighty, who art and wast and art to come, because thou hast taken to thee thy great power and hast reigned. And in verse 18, there's a human reaction. What happens on earth when this takes place? And the nations were angry. And thy wrath is come in the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto the servants and prophets and to the saints and them that fear the name, small and great, and shouldst destroy them who destroy the earth. They're angry. This is the epitome of man's evil heart. One gets the picture of angry drunkards waving their puny fists and shouting at God, stay out of my world. Really? Whose world is this? We sing a song on Sunday morning sometimes. This is my Father's world. He owns this planet. He'll come in at any time, and we had better be careful how we live in his house. That leads us to heaven's anger. He gets back angry at them. Verse 19, and the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his covenant, and there were lightnings and voices and thunderclaps and an earthquake and great hail. God is going to work. And there's a play on word there. Orge is the Greek word. And the same word is being used for angry as for wrath. It's referring to the righteous judgment of God. The wrath of man is impotent. The wrath of God is omnipotent. The wrath of man is wicked. The wrath of God is holy. What an amazing contrast there. Psalm 2 and verse 4 is being fulfilled here. When the nations, they rage against God and against his anointed, and God is in the heaven, will laugh. And he will drive them in judgment at that time. So it's an exciting time there. And then there's happy rewards. The judgment involves the servants, the prophets, the saints, and all who fear his name. So we've got all that. I think I gave that to you, didn't I? So you've got that. And it just the rewards are there. It's nice to know that. A.T. Robertson said, the destruction of the unsaved, God will destroy the destroyers. And that is so true. The holy response in verse 19, there's an answer reported, divine response. The temple's open. The earthly temple is desecrated. The heavenly temple is pure and untainted. The sovereign is there. So that answer is reported. There's an awesome revelation. The sight that he sees in verse 19 is the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant. That brings terror to people if they understand that it represents the presence of God. We could spend a lot of time on that. I want to just go on to the amazing responses, the lightning, the voices, the thunderings, earthquake, and hail. All right, so I'm just going to skip to the bottom there of the page, your page. What page is it there now? You're in 39. Chapter 11, there's a quote there, marks the halfway point in the tribulation. From this point on, God is taking complete control. Up to this point, he's kind of been letting man do just work his awful evil, and he's been letting the devil work on and do his evil deeds. Now it is God coming with his judgment. So there's a progression. Man's judgment is bad enough. The devil's judgment is worse. But God's ultimate judgment is the greatest of all. And so it is his kingdom. Now, one more point here before we move on. There are some who hold that the rapture takes place sometimes in chapter 11 because they're called mid-trib rapturists. And they hold that the rapture takes place sometime in chapter 11. It's hard for them to pinpoint it. But this cannot be, for the 24 elders that are seen in verse 15 are the same elders that are seen in chapter 4 and 5. They're already at the throne of God. So they are part of the church and raptured with John in chapter 4 in verse 1. Now there's many other texts too, but just wanted to point that out. All right, let's come to the great red dragon here in chapter 12. And there's a couple things I want to just point out before we get into this chapter. First of all, I want you to see, just reminded of the Revelation outline. We've seen this pointed out several times. There's the things which thou hast seen in the past, the things which are, chapters 2 and 3, and the things which shall be hereafter, future. And I believe the whole book of Revelation is very chronologically oriented. The whole thing is very naturally chronological. However, we do see that there are some times when there's some interludes, and I'm going to point those out again in just a moment here. Here's again your main outline. They're the things which you've seen, which are, and shall be after. What have we seen already? He saw the seven spirits, the seven lampstands, the stars. He saw Christ. The things that are were the things in his day, were the letters to the churches, and that was present for him. The things which shall be hereafter now, especially the seven seals, seven trumpets, and bowls, and that is all future for him. Now, we have gotten to that section where we're in the trumpet section, and the trumpet's kind of in the middle somewhere. There is when that middle section comes, and that's where the mid part of the tribulation is. Now, just again, look at this chart, because you see the seven seals, we've gone through those, the white horse, red horse, black, pale, the martyrs, the earthquakes, and then the seven trumpets was the last of the seven seals. But that came after this interlude in chapter 7. There was a break there. He said, let me just show you something else and what God's doing here to his people. And I would say, as you put the details of Revelation together, you see that if you compare them with other books like we just finished in Ezekiel, one of the things that happens towards the beginning of the tribulation is God calling his people back into the land. Right now, Israel is dispersed all over the planet. There's more Jews in America than there are in Israel. But when the rapture takes place, why will the Jews want to leave America? I'll tell you why, because the only friend they have left are the Christians right now. If the Christians are gone, the Jews, even now there's all kinds of anti-Semitism. We've had these places, some of these Jews are not feeling safe on some of the colleges across America. And that's one of the places that they're not safe. Some of the synagogues have been attacked and so on. Why is that? Because there's a natural hatred implanted by the devil to God's people. But the Christians are here and say, you know what? You know, we understand that Abrahamic covenant. I will bless those that bless you, and I will curse those that curse you. You curse God's people, and you put yourself square in front of God, who's going to curse you. And so he's going to bring his people back because they're going to say, we got to get out of here. We got to all gather together. Russia hates them. Europe hates them. Every place on the planet hates the Jews. They're going to scramble back to their homeland, and God's going to drive them back and bring them back and protect them there for their last stand. All right, so then the second part comes into these seven trumpets, the hail and fire, the burning mass, burning star, heavenly bodies, demonic locusts, demonic army, and then it leads to the final ones that take place in chapter 16 primarily. But here we are in these chapters now between the seven trumpets and the bowls. He hasn't opened yet the seventh bowl. He said there's an interlude here, something going on here, and I just want to back up here and show you something to see how all of this fits into the time plan of God. God has His plan from the beginning to the end. And it's imperative that we understand that Revelation is built upon all the rest of the Bible, and in particular, the Old Testament. So if we know our Old Testament, we will see then these final days have all been predicted in one way or another in the Old Testament. And so now he's going to pause here and say, there's an interlude. Let me give you, he's going to give us a panoramic view of the plan of God from creation to the very end. And he puts this all in a parenthesis, an interlude. Okay, so we're pausing, we're putting the tribulation period on pause while God is going to, in a sense, give us a picture of the back story here. Now, did I give you a paragraph at the beginning of your notes there in chapter? Okay. The 12th chapter of Revelation specifically exposes the devil to be much worse than our worst imagination of dragons. He is no tameable pet. He is a seven-headed, evil, murderous monster with one goal: to oppose God in every way possible. He is, I cannot imagine wanting to cast his image as a likable, harmless pet, or even having the slightest interest in wanting to be associated with him at all. But that's what the devil wants to give us as an idea. He wants people to think that he can be a pet dragon that you can tame. And have you ever heard of a movie by that name? What is it called? How to Train Your Dragon. He wants people to think that not all dragons are terrible. In fact, there's some that you can actually train and tame, and they can become a household pet. That's one of the biggest lies that you'll ever hear. We see a panoramic summary of the devil's career here succinctly revealed in this chapter. Six key details I want you to notice. All right? The first detail I want you to see, there are all kinds of pictures out there about what the seven-headed dragon looks like. This was one of the most interesting I found. It might be a good depiction of him. Satan's target is the first thing I want you to see. What does he target in verse 1 of chapter 12? And there appeared a great wonder in heaven. So there's a wonder. That word wonder is an interesting word. It means a sign or a symbol, an unusual occurrence transcending the common course of nature, miracles and wonders by which God authenticates his message and messengers. So he targets this woman in verse 12. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Now, here's one of the chapters that people love to have a lot of fun with and go crazy with their ideas of what this means. But you can notice a few things about this woman. She's glorious. She's clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet. She's powerful. She's crowned with 12 stars. Perhaps an allusion to Genesis 37, 9 through 11, where Joseph had a dream picturing the leadership authority, the regal position that God was going to give to him. If this is an allusion to that passage, and I think it might be, then this might be interpreted to mean that this woman was destined to have a regal authority, possibly over the entire world. Israel, the queen of the nations, the greatest, the one that is going to rule the world at the end. The crown with 12 stars would seem to imply her 12 sons, which would be the first of many indicators that this woman pictures the nation of Israel. It is through Israel that Christ will rule the planet during the coming millennial reign. Now think about this for a moment, because this is going to come up in this chapter. When Mary and Joseph came to Bethlehem, who also came to worship the Christ child? The wise men, right? They came from a far country and they asked the question, where is he that is what? King of the Jews, for we have come to worship him, which is what all people are going to do in the millennial kingdom. They're all going to come to Jerusalem to worship the King of the Jews, which is who? Jesus Christ. But somebody didn't like that title. Who was it? Herod did not like that. Who is this King of the Jews? Who was king that everybody was supposed to worship at that time? The Roman Emperor, Caesar, and Herod. And he did not want any competition. So his goal was to get rid of this King of the Jews. If that's the ultimate king of the world, no, we want to have our man King of the world. So there's this battle that is lining up here. She's glorious, she's powerful. Now it tells us she's pregnant. Notice verse 2. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered. So this woman, whoever she is pregnant. And she's going to have a child, and she is crying. So now I've given you her identity. Already, I've told you that it's Israel, and you can see those texts there, Genesis 3:5. The seed of the woman is going to bruise the head of the serpent in Genesis 3:5. And now we're going to see the serpent here. God's going to show us the picture of the serpent who's been terrorizing this planet. But he's going to introduce him with connection to this woman, and the seed of the woman was prophesied back in Genesis 3 that's going to crush the head of the serpent. And Abraham is the founding father of this nation, Genesis 12. Jacob and Judah give the line through which Messiah would come. Now notice secondly then his terror, Satan's terror in verse 3. What does he do? And there appeared another wonder in heaven. There's your wonder. It's a sign. So he's telling us these are signs, these are symbols. Another sign in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his head. All right, so this is a dragon, and he is grotesque. He is red. Probably indicates his bloodthirsty, murderous character. Dragons kill, red dragons feast on human blood. He's grotesque with 7 heads and 10 horns. He is fierce, he's ugly, and he is to be feared. Magnificent power with 7 crowns on his heads and 10 horns, symbols of nations and kings with power. And his identity is Satan. We see that later on. It tells us specifically in verse 9 who the dragon is. So when we hear about a sign, we want to be careful about identifying immediately. I mean, everything fits there, but does the text tell us so? Look at verse 9. It tells us, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, who deceived the whole world. So now we know precisely who that sign is. It tells us specifically, this is the devil. So now let's look at his treachery. What is his goal in verse 4? And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. So now that's the text that we believe probably refers to the fact that there is this war in heaven and Satan got probably 1/3 of the angels to defect with him and to commit treason against God. So we call this the Great Rebellion. And that great rebellion is just horrible. These angels that tried to overthrow God, and they apparently influenced 1/3 of the angels. to join him in this great rebellion. How foolish, how evil, how tragic, how treacherous. The great rebellion. Notice the grisly plot here in verse 4. It goes on to say, "And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to be delivered with one purpose." What did he want to do? It says, to devour her child as soon as it was born. That dragon was working through the Roman Empire and brought all the powers to his skill to try and destroy that child. Whenever the devil was ready, he tried his best. He had the mighty Roman Empire at his disposal, ready to conquer and destroy. That tiny, helpless baby was cornered in Bethlehem. This is the nature of the dragons. They kill. This treacherous beast had one focus: kill the divine Christ child. He knew this baby would grow and become the king of Israel and someday destroy his kingdom and crush his head. So his goal, he's fighting, trying to kill the Christ child. And he wants to do it at the best possible moment, when that child seems so little and helpless. Kill the baby. It's just like the devil to kill children, isn't it? His evil campaign in the whole abortion industry is the devil-inspired plot. Well, notice his trouble in verses 5 and 6. The child is protected. Verse 5, and she brought forth a male child who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. Who is that, folks? The Old Testament uses that phrase. We know that's Christ. That child was destined to rule the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. The devil tried his best all through the 33 years that Christ was on planet Earth. He met him in the desert. He tried to get him to do all kinds of things. Throw yourself down from this temple. Surely the angels will catch you, because it says that in Psalms. And Christ was protected. And so we see the child protected, his identity. Some attempt to interpret this child as the church, claiming that the church is destined to reign with Christ. Wolverd clears that issue up when he explains from the Greek words for man-child, with their emphasis upon this gender, means male. Favor in identification of the child as Christ rather than the church, which would be feminine. The church is seen in the New Testament as feminine. We're the bride of Christ. Christ is the masculine ruler of the world. His rule will be all the nations with a rod of iron. His protection, the devil was not able to get to him. And so his ascension is talked about. He was caught up to God, it says, and to his throne. That word caught up, by the way, is the same word is used in 1 Thessalonians 4, to snatch. And we see that Christ ascended to heaven. And I have this sense that when the rapture takes place, we're going to ascend just the way Christ did. And so this text really identifies him as Christ. No other could be brought to the very throne of God. He is God the Son. So now we've got the interpretation for us here. The woman is also protected now in verse 6. Why? Verse 6, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared by God, and they should feed her there 1,260 days. Somebody do the math. How long is that? Okay. Why would she need to be protected for 3.5 years? Well, because when we go back to the Old Testament in Daniel, we find out that the Antichrist makes a covenant with Israel to protect her for 1 week. That tells us it's a 7-year contract. And when that half of the week comes up, it tells us in Daniel, he breaks the contract there. And he turns on Israel. And he tries to destroy Israel. Tries to eliminate her. So God protects her. The devil, as it were, couldn't get to the Christ child, so he takes out his anger and his rage on his mother, which is the people of Israel, and he hates the Jews. So she flees into the wilderness in verse 6, and God protects her. Some think that that's the place, the city of Petra. Debbie and I were there in 2015. It was a hot day, 110 degrees there, and we walked 3 miles down into the city of Petra. And one of the very first things they showed us as we started coming into this, if you've seen those walls, are near and narrow, and they go up probably a good 100, 120, 130 feet. So it's narrow. It's like it's a natural fortress there. But what they showed us was that there's a place at the beginning. It's very dry there. There's no rivers and everything. It's south of the Dead Sea. And so it's just nothing's there. It's dead. It's dry. But he says every once in a while, in 100 years, they have a flood because the rains come. And if the rains come, that'll become a river, and it just washes right through there. We saw what can happen in Texas just a couple of weeks ago on July 4th, how the river rose so quickly, and that's what would happen. And that's what it appears what the devil's going to try and do. I don't know how he's going to do it, but the devil's going to have some way that he's going to try and flood these people out. Notice what it says in verse 7. Let's go on here. We'll come to that later. The termination here, there is a conflict, there's a war in heaven in verse 7, and the devil, it says, there was a war in heaven, Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, who deceiveth the whole world. He was cast into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come the salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, and the accuser of our brethren is cast down, who accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb. There's the Lamb again. And by the word of their testimony, they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and to the sea, for the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. So I'm just going to quickly give you, he's expulsed from the scene there, and he is exposed for who he is. Now people can know he is raging war on the planet, and he is exposed for who he is. The dragon is given to him, the old serpent, the devil. And then there's a proclamation that is made here, deliverance from the devil, and he's cast down, and the means of him coming there. So I just want to quickly give those to you there, and then move on. The proclamation in verse 10 through 12 is, woe to the inhabitants of earth. There is deadly persecution there. Did I give that to you? All right, so you've got all that. Satan's temper now. Okay, verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman who brought forth a male child. And to the woman were given 2 wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. So most scholars think and believe that time and time and time and times in half a time refers to 3.5 years, most likely referring to the second half of the tribulation. So there's deadly persecution, there's divine assistance, God protects her, gives her wings, lets her get safe there, and the serpent, however, is just desperate to persecute her. And what does he do in verse 15? The serpent casts out of his mouth water like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. So he may have attempted to flood out, if they're down in Petra, he tries to, I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's able to get a flood to go there and try to wash them out. But God somehow is going to protect them. It says, and the earth helped, verse 16, the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. The dragon then was so angry after this divine assistance that he is raging. In verse 17, the dragon was angry with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, who keep the commandment of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So here, I think what we, especially I want you to focus on and realize, is that this chapter is giving us a panoramic view. God is saying, okay, now I want you to recognize what leads up to this final moment here. We've been showing you the tribulation period, but now I want you to see why it's all going to break open and why the devil's doing this. Because it goes way back to the beginning, when I cast him out of heaven, and he came and he tempted and Adam and Eve, he deceived them and caused them to cause the fall for this whole world. And I made a promise then that the seed of the woman would crush the head of the serpent. And now it's going to happen. He's going to come and take care of the devil. So there we've got those events. And I don't know if you've ever seen this, I just think, you know, the devil, people sometimes look at animals and say, oh, wouldn't it be nice? I said, how many of you'd like to have a tiger for a pet in your room? And look at Sheila raised her hand. All right. You know, don't they look so beautiful and wonderful? And I just love to have those. Okay. Well, on that particular day in March 27, 2016, that gentleman right there was visiting the zoo in New Delhi, India. And he was repeatedly warned. He climbed up onto a tall part of the fence. He wanted to get closer to that pet and get as close as he could, what he called a pet. And he lost his balance and he fell, not outside, but inside that pen where that Bengal tiger was. And immediately the tiger leaped and came there and cornered him right there, and that's when somebody took the picture. The people that were surrounding there yelled at the tiger and throwed things and trying to do everything they could to distract him and to protect that man. And the zookeepers were running and coming and trying to help. For 15 minutes, they were able to keep him off. But finally, the tiger leaped upon that man and grabbed him by the neck and shook him and killed him, dragged him back to his den. It's the nature of beasts to kill. And we may look at them and say, you know, I'd like that to be my pet. But you've got to understand the nature of this beast, the devil, is horrible. And he's nothing to play with. I've given you another chart there. I didn't put it up on the screen. It just shows you the opposite of who Christ is and what the devil is. Christ, the devil opposes. Christ is a prophet, and the devil will bring his beast, the false prophet. Christ is a priest, and the devil accuses the brethren instead of bringing those to Christ. The king, and he brings forth his own king of the world empire. So we will see that and go at it.